Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the era of the Deep V. Kevin Thompson, founder and CEO of 9i Capital Group. Thank you guys for joining us. As I always say, subscribe to the channel. As I always say, go and get my book, MLB to CFP live on app on Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@9icapitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.9icapitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. As you know, we're here to do what? Educate, power, engage, and also entertain, and follow us on all social media threads at MLB to CFP. Today, a lot of volatility out there. A lot of things to be concerned about. I'm bringing on my boy back. My boy Andy Ponko, Tenon Financial. We're going to be talking about don't call it a comeback. Been in it for years. We're talking about IULs. These people coming back on, coming out of nowhere, using the volatility to sell you products. You don't want to miss this. We're going to expose, we're going to educate, and we're going to empower you. Let's get it. We got my man, Andy Ponko, Tenon Financial. Andy, thank you for joining the Nine Innings podcast today, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to be here. Looking forward to this. Should be fun.
This is going to be fun because we are in a situation right now of panic. And I'm going to tell you this, Andy. I'm worried about you, man. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you because, I mean, the markets are volatile. You don't know which direction anything's going to go. And I got an idea for you. What if I could tell you that, or I could show you a way where you can have downside protection, upside potential, death benefit for your family.
You got me.
Hey, and guess what? Guaranteed income for the rest of your life, because you don't want this volatility, my friend. You don't want this volatility. Trust me.
No. Okay. Wow. Sounds enticing. Lay it on me.
Man, and I'm going to say, don't call it a comeback, because this is what we're talking about today. Right now, the people are coming out of the woodworks, because when volatility hits, you know what's coming next. You got your best friend who just lost his job as an Uber driver coming up and telling you how he has the greatest product for you and your family. You need it. And I've been seeing some of your posts, and we're going to get into it right now. Don't call it a comeback, the IUL story. Like, what are you seeing out there right now, especially in that environment? Because you know when volatility kicks in, the IUL people come out of the woodworks. I mean, it's like anywhere you go, they're like, hey, you need this product. Save your family. No volatility. Guaranteed income. Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing out there and how people can kind of get rid of the noise. Because I know volatility is a big thing, but again, markets are always volatile.
Yeah. So index universal life insurance, IUL, or even index annuities, which aren't insurance, but have the same indexing feature where the interest they get can't be less than zero. It'll only be some positive amount based on the, you know, piggybacking off of the returns of some index like the S&P 500.
Yeah.
Growth of these products has been happening for a while, especially since the financial crisis. It seems like the concept of indexing and the concerted effort of the insurance industry and independent agents to get out and distribute index products has continued to increase. It has a lot of nice sound bites and talking features and sales points that resonate with a lot of people, especially when traditional stock markets, such as the S&P 500, are really volatile or down, such as happened recently with the pending trade war and tariffs and markets kind of going haywire here and there for a handful of days. The second there's ugliness or volatility or drop in the market, people who sell these index products come out of the woodwork, and without fail, they will sell on fear and say, hey, market just dropped 3%, 4%, 5%. You can have upside with no downside, zero floor, never lose money, et cetera, et cetera. And be opportunistic about selling it at that time when there is heightened fear and uncertainty in the market.
Oh, heightened fear, uncertainty. And I love what you're doing on LinkedIn, because I know we talk about it a lot, but you catch those people. And what irritates me the most, and I know you feel this, they come out and they talk as if they are Nobel laureates around the economics of everything. Like, well, you know, this is how this works, and this is how you just don't understand the product, Andy. You don't understand the product enough, and that's why you're asking these questions. And all we got to do, and I know you do this, you go in their resume or LinkedIn resume, and you see Uber driver, chef, worked at such and such, worked at Chipotle. I'm like, well, geez, I mean, this guy's a Nobel laureate all of a sudden. I mean, what does he teach? I need to learn a little bit more about this guy, and maybe I can have him jump on a podcast one day and explain the whole world of infinite banking and all these other products to me. But one thing I will say is this, please help me understand, why is it that these people, and you help me understand this, why are these people, when they're so in love with this product, and I know the answer for me, but when they fall in love with this product, they have this delusion on, okay, I understand everything finance at this time. And you, I know you feel it. I know you feel it because you ask 100%. Questions, and it's like, yeah. Oh my God, okay.
I think it's twofold. It's a mix of they don't fully understand it. They were taught about it from people who similarly don't fully understand it. Oh. So there's just sort of this ignorance. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but lack of thorough understanding of the inner workings of this products and the risk factors to it and the various dynamics that can make it turn out well, turn out poor, whatever, over the long term. There's a lack of true, honest, thorough understanding, education about it. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. And I want to believe that's the majority of the reason why so many people who sell this are so 100% full on into it. It's just the lack of truly understanding it.
Yeah.
The smaller portion is people who do understand it and are really just out there to sell product. Like they're intentionally, I don't say lying, but you know, omitting the full story or talking in palatable, nice sounding sound bites that are things people want to hear and glossing over or not touching on the downsides. And I've brought that up to a lot of people, like, hey, you're just talking about what could go right, the possible ways this can work well for someone. You're not mentioning any of the potential downside or possible ways it can go sour. And the common response is, well, I don't have enough time in this 30-second video or this, you know, whatever, 200-character LinkedIn post. But when I have the meeting with people, I give them the full disclosure and they sign and whatever. Okay, fine, whatever. So I think that's why. And a lot of people, or at least those with the loudest and biggest social media presence from what I've anecdotally observed, are people who came from different backgrounds and get into certain models, certain insurance sales models that really incentivize, hey, come and sell, recruit people under you to sell, make a lot of money. Yeah, we're helping families, et cetera. But you know, it's at the end of the day, it's really about trying to incentivize people to come and sell stuff. Doesn't matter what that stuff is. It's just like, hey, come and sell.
And everyone, he's talking about multi-level marketing companies, just FYI on that.
Yeah. Otherwise known as pyramid sales, not pyramid schemes. There's a difference. Pyramid schemes are illegal operations.
Yeah.
Pyramid sales aren't illegal. It just visualizes the structure of you sell something, you hire people under you to sell something, you get a cut of their commission. They hire people under them, and the commission flows upline to the top of the pyramid. So these are, you know, more technically called multi-level marketing things. Mm-hmm. Like Cutco knives is multi-level marketing. Mm-hmm. Nutritional supplements, I think Tupperware, Amway, those are all multi-level marketing. As is a large part of the insurance sales and distribution arms are multi-level marketing, just the same. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people get into these from different backgrounds: retail experiences, other sales jobs. Things unrelated to finance, unrelated to insurance. These are people that have desire and hustle and the willingness and wanting to make money. And these opportunities sound amazing because a lot of the focus within these multi-level marketing organizations is on recruiting. It's less about truly understanding and selling a product and more about recruiting, especially if you want to build up your own personal income and sort of, you know, business pyramid beneath you. So they give, in my view, and from what I've seen online, just rudimentary sort of minimal training, emphasizing the positives, the talking points people want to hear. I've seen snapshots of some of the training where they're in a sense bad-mouthing 401ks with just inaccurate information. And so this is the kind of training information that's getting perpetuated throughout the MLM industry. Not all of them, not every person in the system, but a lot of them have this common denominator of just get people eager to sell, eager to make money. Give them basic training, get them out there. IUL seems to be one of the products at the forefront of what they're trying to distribute. I frankly Don't know exactly why. I don't know if it's because it sounds nice, has a lot of good talking points, or if the carriers who create the products are incentivizing them to push that over other forms of permanent insurance. Whatever the reason is, it's definitely the product du jour and has been for a handful of years now.
Man, so by the way, I got the deep V going. So I want you to, I want to let the people know I got the deep V going. We're getting in the summertime. I'm just going to wear a bunch of V's.
Stylish cat.
Yeah. I came from that industry. As I'm not going to mention the name, but I came from the industry where every place you went, it talked to you about volatility of the stock market. You don't need that. This is where you need to put your money. And of course they were talking about whole life insurance at the time.
Yeah.
And again, I have four whole life insurance on me and my family. So I don't necessarily I believe in it. I believe in it. Well, I shouldn't say believe in it. Like it exists. Right. So I agree with the philosophy around that. But again, is it for everyone? And that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
They sell it like it's for everyone and it's not, you know, and that's what irritates the hell out of me.
Yeah. Everything, every product has its time, has its place, has its pros, has its cons. Whether when it does come to permanent life insurance, whether it's whole life, index universal life, there's even variable universal life. There's reasons and potential.
Hey, you're not talking about the LLUL like we always talk about, though, man.
The ladies love universal life. Yeah. No. That hasn't hit the market yet. It should, and you and I should be the ones to do it. But yeah, the issue I take with it is, oftentimes IUL, and it seems to be mostly from, again, the multi-level marketing places, which not coincidentally seem to have the least experienced, least trained people selling the stuff. They sell it kind of as this panacea, Swiss Army knife. I've seen that term used 100%. A lot.
Yeah.
Cure all ailments. It's better than a 401k. Not only is it a superior investment option, it can provide tax-free income. It can provide living benefits of disability coverage, long-term care coverage. It has a permanent death benefit. You can borrow against it since you're taking on loans. Loans aren't taxable. You don't have to pay the loans back if you manage and fund the policy properly. And all these things are true on the surface. But there's a lot more devil to the details and nuances and ways in which this can go wrong over time. And so people are pitching this to the masses.
Yeah.
On social media, to low-income folks, to middle-income folks, to anyone who will listen. These things sound like the best product ever that can cure everything.
That's what scares me, because a lot of it's going to low-income individuals, and it just blows up in their face. You can put $50 a month into this. No, you can't. Well, hold on. You can.
Right.
You can. Yeah. I'm sorry. You can, but you shouldn't. You know what I mean? It's a different story than being able to do something. And that 401k thing pisses me the hell off, by the way, because I think I said this maybe a couple months ago. I said, can we stop with the 401k argument? I said, let's just say I was a $100,000 individual income wise, and I put 6% in my 401k and I was getting matched 3%, whatever it looks like. I said, when you do the math, I said, that matched that free money. I said, what kind of rate of return would you need in anything else to offset the match? I said, just if I'm getting 100% match on 3% or whatever, I said, that money is offsetting my taxes moving forward in the future. I said, and by the way, my break even on that moving forward, just think about it. My break even on that, what kind of rate of return, I said, what kind of tax rate would I need to break even on my original investment? And my tax rate was about 57%. It said 57% has to be the tax rate in the future that negates all of my principal amount that I put into my 401k. And that's including the match. I said, so do I think tax rates are going to be 60% in the future? No. But at the end of the day, it's like, I wish people would just stop harping on. And again, we know why they do it, because they want to sell a product. I get that for sure.
Yeah.
Now,
definitely.
I want something. You have become a marked man. And I know a lot of these agencies are I don't want to name the name because I want to give them any light, but some people out there are saying you're a bad guy. You're going against the grain here. You're talking too much about their product. So what kind of negative feedback have you been getting thus far about when you call people out on social media, whether it be on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, what have you?
I've been called troll.
Not harsh, not the harshest thing, but like what's the most common thing that they say to you outside of, I don't have the time to talk about it? Like, what are some of the other things that they mentioned that they don't want to talk about on those threads?
Frankly, they just block me usually. There's dozens. I can't even count at this point. I was keeping track, but I lost track. How many people have blocked me? And, you know, I guess it's easier just to tune me out. So I can't view their post and I can't comment on it than it is to actually respond to my comments. And I mean, you know this about me. When I do comment on stuff, now I should say all the things I'm commenting on, these are in public domain. Yeah. It's Instagram, it's LinkedIn. It's not like I'm going to private closed door meetings with their clients and be like, hey, what he's saying isn't true. If you're putting something out there in the public, and it's in any way false or misleading, in my view, there's nothing wrong with someone bringing attention to that. Now, do 100%. It tactfully. Don't just say, hey, Jerky, you're lying. Like, and you know, my approach to it is, it may be a little like leading them, but I'll ask them a question. Oh, can you elaborate on that? Or, oh, why do you feel that's tax-free? And then see where it goes. And then the more they respond, the more what they said starts to fall apart. Or, you know, those reading can at least see that's not entirely accurate.
Yeah.
And so usually people kind of comment back and will engage for a while. Then eventually they just stop because, you know, I'm bringing too much not positive light to what they're saying and what they're doing. Mm. And they'll delete my comments and or block me entirely, which is usually the route people go. Some people do get testy and call me names. Eventually they end up blocking me, but I've been called troll, gadfly. There was one guy did make some homophobic comments about just me, but people who were supporting me in my comments.
Wow.
Like that was a new one. Mm-hmm. There's some really unsavory people out there in the world on social media selling financial products. It's interesting, for lack of a better word.
And like I mentioned before, the one thing we could always do, especially in this industry, and again, I am not against insurance sales, guys. Matter of fact, I'm not against commission-based sales. I don't care how you get paid. I mean, if we look at Apple, Google, and all these other companies, they have multiple income streams coming from multiple product lines, whether it be from iPhones, Mac sales, services, what have you. So however you want to structure your business, go ahead and do that. But one thing I will say is that what irritates me, like I mentioned to you previously, when these people start talking as if they're Fama French on these threads, and they're attacking me, and I'm just like when I go in to say, hey, explain that to me or whatever, oh, you just don't understand. I'm like, okay, well, enlighten me, right? And that's what irritates me, when you go, oh, you've only been in this business for 6 months and you're telling me how something about, you know, structuring life insurance policies and all this other stuff. Oh, you are the master of your domain. I don't understand why they get that defensive, but I mean, I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah, all the time. There was one guy, not was, but is one guy at one of the larger multi-level marketing places who he and I commented back and forth for a while. We actually had a Zoom. You know, I chatted with him a couple years ago over Zoom, and it was cordial. But he kept making some posts and some pitches that had some outright false stuff, but otherwise, you know, some misleading stuff. And I'd comment on it, and he eventually blocked me. Mm-hmm. Well, I found out he wrote a book, a self-published book on Amazon. It was called something like the No BS. It was actually the title, The No BS Guide to Finances and Financial Literacy or something. Ugh. I bought it, read it. There's a lot of BS in it. and I let him know. I sent him an email about it. I gave a full detailed description of my feedback and explained what was wrong, what was misleading, what was BS.
I love what you do with that, man. Like you go into the weeds, man. And I appreciate you for that, by the way. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
Go ahead. Oh, no, quite all right. Like I think that's important to really dig down and get to the facts of how things work, how they don't work, not just talking sound bites.
Yeah.
And so he did have a lot of good information in there. The guy came from a retail background. He wasn't in financial services at all until a handful of years ago. And now he's one of the top producers, top sellers at this place. And he's got a decent sized pyramid under him, from what I gather. Mm-hmm. So he did have a lot of good info. He did a lot of research. He did touch on 401ks and investing and stuff. But the whole book was very clearly written to shine a positive light on insurance products and a negative light on traditional securities and investable assets.
Okay.
There was some wrong information. There was some half-truths. There was some misleading information. The final chapter of the book was literally, I forget the title, was literally like pitching you to come, you know, to recruit you to sell under him if you want the same opportunity. So, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about the reason for writing the book. But you can go look. I won't share the name of the book here, but just search like No BS Guide to Financial something or other. Mm. I wrote a really lengthy review detailing the pros, the cons, and what was wrong and misleading or actual BS about his No BS book. which is interesting. Same guy, I saw him on an Instagram post. This company he's with has a lot of motivational marketing. They're talking about hyping people typical. Up and coaches typical. And be the best you and typical. You know, like building character. And he was getting interviewed by some other guy. He's like, you know what? I don't want people to be yes men and tell me things they like about me. I want someone to tell me what I do wrong to make me better. Which is ironic because I sent him a very detailed, constructive post about how he could be better. And he literally wrote back, I don't give a S what you think about me or your feedback. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Cause you know, you claim to say you want that feedback and now you're telling me to go F off. So that's the kind of people you're dealing with in a lot of these places.
And it's scary. It's scary.
I
get some of that. I mean, so to be frank, like I like to diffuse a lot of my situations. Like, I'm not sure if you read a lot of my, I diffuse as much as possible. I'm not trying to start anything. Most of my stuff starts, and you do a very good job of this as well. Most of mine starts like, hey, I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to be enlightened. Can you help me? Can you help explain this, this, and this? And then I just let it go. I mean, one thing I've gotten better at, quite frankly, is the trolls, man. I've just stopped engaging. I said, I don't have time for this. I mean, we don't really have time for it, but we do want to be that purveyor of knowledge and that person that can parse through the noise and say, hey man, this is not right. Can you kind of, you know, like change your mode of thought there? And again, it's very difficult because especially in today's environment, people like to kind of start attacking you. And like, I'll use that Jarvis ad hominem attacks. So, but man, talk to me real quick. So volatility, markets, tariffs, we saw the president just come out and say, oh, I'm not going to deal. I mean, just call it what it is. I want to back off a little bit. Do you feel that in today's environment with the volatility that there's a place for these types of products for certain individuals? And again, I'm not saying any particular product in itself, but Is there a place normally for these types of products that can offset some of the volatility? And let's just be on the good side of it. Like, there's a place for some of these products in people's lives if it fits for you. What do you say about that?
That's it. If it fits for you, what are you trying to solve?
Yeah.
What product or solution best solves it or tries to solve it for you? So stock market can be risky, will be volatile. For people who are 20, 30 years old, the portion of their money they're earmarking for retirement, for long-term growth, they don't plan on touching for 20, 30, 40 years, they can deal with the volatility. The volatility is sort of the, you know, the whole risk-reward concept. You kind of have to accept that higher risk for the best chances of that long-term growth. You know, when you're looking to maximize long-term growth, there's no free lunch. It's going to come with volatility. It's going to be bad years. But that's okay. Again, if you're not touching it for 20, 30, 40 years, that's fine. For money you need in, you know, 4 weeks for a down payment on a house you're buying, there should be zero risk in that. That should be sitting in cash, in a savings account, in whatever, right? And then everything in between.
But you just said that though, because now like that's what they pitch. And I'm telling you right now, this one guy just told me this a few days ago. Kevin, you're wrong. I said, okay, explain this to me. He said, I had a product, a single pay, and I had cash value in it. I said, yeah, of course you have cash value in it, right? And he said, well, in this one particular circumstance, the company they incorrectly valued it, and it was a quote unquote a unicorn, and it worked out. I said, okay, so we're talking about unicorns now, right? We're talking about unicorns. And he was like, I put one single premium in it, and I never had to pay another premium, and it's just done great. I'm like, oh god. But that's one way they pitch it. They say, you can put cash in here and you'll have immediate access to cash value depending how you structure it, right? And by the way, your break even 7, 8, 9 years into the future, let's just be real. Like, oh, but my return is positive. You're never going to have a stock market downturn. You're not going to see negative results. Yeah, but you'll see negative results the first 7 years of your policy. You know what I mean? So stop saying
initial cost and fees. Yeah.
There's
IUL in particular, I think, is even more of a bespoke use case.
Yeah.
Permanent life in general, whether it's, you know, let's just assume whole life as the most plain vanilla sort of steady Eddie product, comparatively speaking. If someone wants and need permanent life insurance coverage for whatever reason, they have a special needs child they want to fund, they have a business they're going to need to buy out, they're going to have liquidity issues when they pass and need quick liquidity for their estate, whole, permanent life insurance 100% is something you should consider. Once you make the decision, I want or need permanent life insurance, then you come down to, well, which type? Whole life is sort of the lowest risk, lowest variability of the options. Variable universal life, crazy uncle on the other end of the spectrum, right? You know, because it's invested in stock and stock-like investments.
Yeah.
IUL sits somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. So depending what your risk tolerance and capacity is and your reasons for wanting and needing permanent life insurance, that sort of drives where on this risk spectrum of permanent life insurance you should lie and what product you should consider. So if you want steady Eddie, minimize risks, it's whole life. If you're willing to take a lot of risk for potentially a lot more growth, it's variable universal. IUL somewhere in that middle. Could it make sense? Sure. Are there all those ancillary benefits and living benefits? Sure. The way it's pitched and the people it's pitched to, I can't prove this, obviously, but I'm pretty confident saying the majority of people who buy it, they're going to be let down with how this thing ultimately performs for them. A lot of times it'll be a function of user error, not error, but user not funding it and managing it as they originally thought they would. Not the product blowing up just because the product's bad, but like, and that's the risk, right? If someone is living paycheck to paycheck or close to it, it's not a product problem that they have. Whether they invest in a 401k or buy an IUL, that's not going to solve things for them. Nope. It's a cash flow issue. It's a understanding of money issue. It's a behavioral issue. It's a spendthrift issue. No product solves that. With an IUL, you may get into it the best of intentions, but if 1 year, 2 years down the road, you lose your job or you just lose focus and interest and start funneling that money into other things, bad things can happen with that policy. Worst case, it could lapse and you lose everything you paid into it.
Yeah.
Now, granted, along the way, you have life insurance coverage. So if you do die, there's the death benefit while the policy is in force. But I suspect, especially a lot of the ways this gets sold on social media, the people buying it, they're not going to have these policies more than a handful of years. And chances are they're not going to die while the policy is still in force.
The last thing I want to say is this. What a lot of people don't realize is that when you have these products in place, you're doing it because it's part of a longer term plan, right? But the issue I find is that, oh, well, my original advisor is no longer here. He went to such and such, such and such, or he's no longer in the business. Yeah. And you have 1, 2, 3, 4 different advisors over the long-term plan of this thing that supposedly is supposed to be a financial, a pivotal piece of your financial plan. But then you're constantly going back to the new person saying, why do I have this? You know what I mean? And that makes it just a terrible, terrible situation. And now this new person saying, you know what? Let's try to do it this way. And you're getting new ideas on top of new ideas. And next thing you know, you're left upset and you're saying, you know what? I don't want this thing anymore. I want my money out of it. I'm done with it. I've seen that happen more times than not. And especially in our industry where the failure rate is over. What's the failure rate? 80-something%, 90% in some cases, depending 90 on
90-something is the last figure I heard. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a huge issue, especially when you're providing someone a product that needs to be understood every single year. You know it, because you're like, oh, why do I have this again? How does this work again? Yeah. They always come back to it over and over and over again, man.
Yeah, there's such high turnover, and I assume the multi-level marketing approach is even worse.
Getting against the wall,
higher turnover.
Yeah,
yeah. Because again, people without background, understanding, proper education and this stuff get sort of scooped up in this recruiting pitch of become an entrepreneur, be your own boss, the amount of money you make is unlimited, it's how much you put in, create general wealth, et cetera, et cetera. And to be fair, a lot of people do make boatloads of money doing it, but those are the ones who make it to the top of the pyramid and can tough it out for whatever the reasons are. You know, all the other people below them scrape by, if at all, and usually just burn out. And these things, these places don't pay salaries, 100% commission.
Yeah.
So you only get paid if you sell stuff. And so just a lot of people just sort of come and go. There's a lot of turnover and policies do need to be serviced, right? You know, the guy who sold it to you left. Now someone else takes it over. Frankly, there's not a lot of financial incentive for them to do it. The commission is paid. The bulk of it, if not all of it, is paid when the policy is sold. Mm-hmm. So good luck. You know, someone leaves 5-6 years into your policy. It gets orphaned and inherited by the next in line in this pyramid. Yeah. What's their incentive to make sure you're properly serviced and you know, get the accurate advice? The other thing is if people, all they do is sell insurance, they're not real advisors. Uh-oh. They're just going to talk to you about the insurance policy. Like they don't have the holistic view. Hey, there's no incentive to talk about other stuff.
I feel the bots coming now when you say stuff like that. They start to circle around us.
They are, I mean, call it what it is. Like, yeah. There's lots of people who give themselves fancy titles. Like one guy at one of these large multi-level marketplaces calls himself a wealth strategist.
Oh my God.
He is licensed purely to sell insurance and annuities.
I've heard so many of those names.
Wealth strategist, right? Yeah. Tax exempt money specialist, safe money specialist, any sort of creative combination you can think of. Now, to be fair, I assume there are some out there that are minimally biased, thoroughly knowledgeable and educated, and do truly give holistic guidance and advice about the rest of your finances. Vast majority of them, definitely out. They're out to make a sale and then hopefully make another sale down the road. Good ones will properly service your policy to make sure you're happy throughout time. But most of them, I'm inclined to say probably not. They sell it and they're more or less off to the next sale.
Well, I'll tell you this. I enjoy you, man. I think this is fun just to have these back and forth like this sometimes because it gets us out of the minutia of like, what is a Roth account? You know, just a constant education and just really just hard hitting, having a fun conversation. And this is the last question for you, my man. So give me one hot take about the industry that you've never said out loud. I know it's kind of difficult to kind of come off your top, but what would you say? What's a hot take? Like I can, if you want me to go first, I will. I mean, but I want your hot take.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear yours. I'll say, I don't think there's anything I've never said out loud. I'm comfortable and confident in saying what I feel as long as it's said tactfully and, you know, diplomatically and professionally. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what's yours? I got two. What's yours?
Well, I've always said that it's stop being afraid to make money in this business. Some people in our world feel like it's a sin to actually run a successful business. And whether it's AUM, whether it's commission, however you get paid, stop the nonsense, make your money, because the more money you make in this business, the better you will be able to take care of your clients the way you want to take care of them. The last thing you want to do is be in this business, struggling in this business, and then having to make something happen on your next client, forcing an issue. I am all about make as much money as you can, as long as you can, so you can service your clients as long as you can. That's just my two cents.
I like it. Yeah. It's interesting because one of my hot takes is kind of the counterpoint to that.
Okay, talk to me.
I got two things. One is a lot of the industry is about production and getting you to buy something.
And that's not what I'm talking about, by the way.
Now, this is a for-profit business. I agree with 100%. You, right? Yeah. Everyone in the business needs to make money to be able to stay in the business, provide for their families, you know, stay servicing clients, et cetera. Obviously, this is not a charitable business.
Yeah, not a 501.
Nope. But where I was going with this is the alignments of incentives are oftentimes very different. A lot of places, like I said, they're in the business of getting you to buy something or do something that may or may not be in your best interest. So you need to know enough to know what you think is best for you, what you think you need, understand what's getting presented to you to know, is this really my best interest? Or is it just so happens that's all this person sells and he or she's framing it to be this perfect solution for me? So that's the first thing. Second thing, specific to permanent life insurance, and I've said this in public, is vast majority of low income, even a lot of middle income people, flat out should not buy permanent life insurance policies, whether it's whole life, IUL, etc.
I just feel it coming in.
I'm not saying don't buy insurance. Like,
I'm just kidding with you.
Term, right? You know, term 100%, right? You know, if someone who's 35 and their sole breadwinner in their family dies, that's catastrophic. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You can cheaply and easily get term coverage to get you through the next 20 years until kids are grown, mortgage is paid off, whatever. Sinking money into a permanent policy where you're going to get much less death benefit for what you're paying in, that's asking for trouble for people who are already strapped to make financial ends meet or, you know, barely beyond living paycheck to paycheck. There's a really good chance they'll be more harmed than helped by getting a permanent life insurance policy.
Uh-oh. I'm going to say something that I've never said. I've said it out loud.
All right. Just not to me?
No, I've said it. Oh, I'm going to say it to you right now.
Okay. Do it.
You will never go wrong with buying a term insurance policy. I'm saying it right now. You will never go wrong buying a term insurance policy to start with. If you want to do a conversion later and all that stuff, by all means, if you want to educate someone later, by all means. But I just say get insured, get you some term insurance, and all the other gobbledygook that comes down the pipe, you can listen to it. But just get insured. Take care of your family.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Hot takes. I like it.
Hot takes, man. Thank you for joining the 90s podcast today, my friend, Andy Ponko. Hey, be careful out there, man. I worry about you sometimes, man. I'm like, man, you piss off a lot of people, but I love it. I love it.
I do it professionally, and I'm protecting my neck, so I'm good.
Hey, man, you do a good job, man. Appreciate you as always, man. Thank you for jumping on. And again, love you, man. And hopefully I'll see you if you one of these industry events. I'm going to Future Proof in the next couple of weeks, so we'll see. If you're ever out at Future Proof, let me know.
I might be there in September, possibly.
Well, hey, I'm going to see you there, my friend. I appreciate you.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah. We had Andy Ponko and we had the Deep V on the 90s podcast. And today we talked about don't call it a comeback. We have all of these things happening right now. Volatility, tariffs, people trying to scare you, trying to get you to move and do things that may not be in your best interest. And our job is here is to educate, empower, engage, and also entertain. Subscribe to the 90s podcast. Go and get my book, MLB to CFP Live on Apple and Amazon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at info@99capitalgroup.com. Send us your questions. Go to the website at www.99capitalgroup.com. Schedule an appointment. Andy Ponko on the call today. We are no fear. Don't listen to all of those people that haven't been in the business for about a couple of months trying to sell you products. Like I said before, best thing you can possibly do, get you a term insurance policy, take care of your family, and then we can have further discussions later. This is what I say. I'll stand on it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay humble, stay safe. I'll see you again soon.